awesome July and August. Yeah, and that's about it. But the rest of the year is pretty nice too. Actually, a nice fall. But our one of the things we just seem to happen, we have spring from March till sometime at the beginning of July. It just seems to end. And anyways, that's Cape Breton. So we're here tonight, and just to discuss a few things. I'll tell you what we're going to do tonight. I'm going to just share two types of things. One is some of the things that some of the youth and young adults who have come through our church in the last decade say that they have struggled with when it comes to faith. And then some things that some groups have done to help connect young people to different churches. And then we're going to have a time for some question and answer and end with some prayer at the end. So that's the whole thing tonight. And hopefully won't have you too long. But who here would love to see the youth in their community come to know Christ? Probably just about everyone here. And if you don't, you're just in the wrong meeting tonight. And I don't know where you think you are. But anyways, that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. And this is the conclusion I've come to when it comes to that. It's like, I believe that every community is praying that God would do something. First of all, just not just with young people, just with everyone in their community, of course. And so I've often wondered, what would it look like if that happened? So I live in Glace Bay, which I don't really think is a lot different than Bathurst. There's some similarities. Like Glace Bay used to be like an economic hub of Cape Breton. It is not. And even as I'm going around Bathurst, like Glace Bay is just under 20,000 people. And like Bathurst has 3 to 4 times as much business as Glace Bay does. And like the economic situation, it just tanked years ago. So we have a mall, and it has a Dollarama, and it has this thing, is it the man shop? Is that what it's called? You guys know? Anyway, it's like this big. The man cave, it's a cave, it's the right name. It's like this wide, and it's got a little drugstore in there, and like that's our mall. We don't have a theater, we don't have a pool, rec center. Right now we don't even have a hockey arena. Our hockey arena shut down. And so economically depressed, and along with that, a lot of drug addiction has followed the poverty and stuff. So in Cape Breton right now, over 50% of every young adult male is considered alcoholic. It's 55%. And the amount of drugs that are in Cape Breton, like I realize that there's drug issues and addiction issues everywhere. And people say, well, it's the same everywhere. I actually don't think it's the same everywhere. It's bad everywhere, but there's spots that are worse. And so in the last 8 years, the amount of needles that have gotten exchanged in Cape Breton has never gone less than an increase of 25% over the year before. And so right now in Cape Breton, somewhere between 600-700% higher per capita, the amount of needles that get exchanged and the safe needles, compared to the mainland of Nova Scotia. So is drug use the same everywhere? No. According to our own Nova Scotia stats, there's 700% more people using opiates and using drugs where they're injecting in Cape Breton. So that's where we start. So when we moved to our community that we're at right now, when we went there to plant, churches and kind of do what we're doing now, not knowing how it was all going to turn out, but we didn't know if there was any young people that were actually involved with any church in our community of any denomination. And so that can seem like this, wow, that's like overwhelming. Like, where can you start when that's the case? And I think a lot when we think about youth ministry or the things that we have, we think, you know, we're going to do this once we have some young people to do this with. And so we took the opposite approach, and we started youth programs when we had no young people. And we built a youth center when we had no youth, which is complete opposite of how most things operate. And so it's backwards. That's kind of our story. We've done everything backwards. Except the only thing I can say is right now I got a couple young people who are in front of me, and some of them are kids who started coming to our youth center up to 10 years ago who are now our ministry school students. And so we may have done it backwards, but I'm happy we did everything backwards, and I'm happy that there's some people sitting in the front row. Amen? Yeah. All right. So So here's the challenge. I'm going to say a few things, but this is the beginning point. In across our churches in Canada, especially if depending what denomination from, I'm going to say a couple stats from different denominations and stuff today. But this is kind of a general one. About 85% of all people who come to faith do so as children or young people. 85%. Now, in this room, you can come up with some people who, that's not when you got saved later in life. But the majority of people who come to faith do so as young people. And so when you live in a community and you look around at the average age in all the churches, and you think, okay, most people who come to faith do so as young people, you come to a point in our churches, we look around and think, we've missed something in this generation. And so one of my favorite scriptures, and sorry if you're here this morning, I shared this scripture, and I'm going to put it up here so you can read it. And it's this, out of the book of Ecclesiastes, and it's this, of course, there's a bunch of stories in this book who start off like meaningless, everything is meaningless, but there's this one story, and if you read the bottom line, it's all so meaningless and depressing. This story is different than all the other ones that are out of this book of the Bible because they're just meaningless, everything's meaningless. This one, to top it all off, meaningless and depressing. And of course, it's a story of a man who saves up all this stuff, all this wealth, and he realizes he has no one to give it to. And that's not our calling as a church, because as Pastor Andy read tonight, that our ministry as a church is to take what God has blessed us with and give it to the next generation. And so if we get to a point and realize, well, we missed that, or we're struggling to do that, we look around sometimes and wonder, man, what is it that we should be doing? And I'm not here to give a bunch of answers tonight. You may have thought, like, Dave knows all the answers. Dear Lord, I do not know all the answers at all. We're just some people trying to do some stuff. And so we can share some of the stuff that we've learned along the way. But this is just for some general information, Risto. This is really good stuff right here. And so these guys were just sitting at a class with me at Kingswood the other day, so they heard me talk about this. This is a fancy graph that I did not make. I stole it and brought it here and just were putting it on the wall. And some of the guys who put the hemorrhaging faith study put this together. But I'm going to explain what this is. This represents all of the youth and young adults in our churches from about the year 2000 to 2011. Okay? As of today, 23%, this is across Canada, every denomination put together, 23% of them would say that they today are engaged in their faith. So a little bit out of one out of four. Now these are the people who grew up in the church. One out of four remain as active adults in the church. And then the next group, we just called them, I didn't make the name up again, I stole this from someone, called fence sitters. 36%. And these are people, they're not opposed to faith. They still may go at Christmas and Easter and special events, but are not like actively living out their faith. Not opposed to it. Haven't said they reject it, but that's just kind of where the state that they're in. And put in perspective, that group of 36% represents 1 million Canadians. There's 1 million right now, youth and young adults who grew up in the church in Canada right now who would fall into that category, that are living in our communities across Canada. That's actually a really large amount. And then we have this group called the Wanderers who are kind of moved past that, where they really, faith never crosses their mind. It's not that they're opposed, have rejected or anything else. And then this last group, it would be the rejectors. This would be everyone from atheist, agnostic, or just violently opposed to church today. And so this isn't general public. This graph is about people who actually grew up in the church and where they are today. And so, I'm going to throw one more. I don't have all graphs tonight, but I do have a few I brought with me. This is something to show some differences between denominations when it comes to that 23%. And this may sound like, this first of all could depress people, but I think this graph is actually incredibly encouraging. So, for example, on the Catholic Church in Quebec, it's 6%. You know, the other day I said this was 4%. I made a mistake. It's 6%. 6% of all the youth and young adults in the last couple decades who have come through the Catholic Church in Quebec, only 6 out of 100 today will say that they're actively engaged in their faith in any way. In the Catholic Church across Canada, it's about 17%. Mainline denominations, so that could be the United Church, Anglican, for example, 16%. And then in the Evangelical Church, it's 46% of all our kids and youth have remained actively. And then, and in that, we'll have some churches who are doing extremely well, and then some that are lower. So I know a lot of people saw this and were just completely depressed over like these numbers. But there's something that this shows. There's some things that some churches are doing that are working. And so the last couple of years, like when the Hemorrhaging Faith Study, that was the study that I took some of this stuff from, was done, a lot of people were very upset about the results. But there's also some things that amongst this group, 46%, that most of those young people say were things that helped them in their faith. And that's part of what I'm going to be sharing tonight. What is it that young people said really helped them grow and stay connected to their church and to their faith? And so we're going to do some of those tonight. Before I get into the first one, let's do a couple more. Maybe I will. Yes, I will. This is quite a discrepancy. 60 to 90% of the kids and youth that are in our church leave by the age of 18. Again, that really depends on your denomination. That's why it's 60 to 90%, like across the board. So the biggest drop in Canada, by the way, when young people stop going to church, is across the board, it's about between 12 and 13 is actually the biggest drop-off. It's not, and then there's another drop like at about 18, and then from out of college age into the workforce. But most of it, times when there's, it seems we lose a lot of people at once, it's around transition times. So going from your children's ministry into youth ministry or junior high to senior high, and then senior high into, it depends really on the church, could be a young adult group or it could be just into the adult body, whatever it happens to be. But this is one that I've often, this one I thought is really important. This is one of the things that came out of that study. And it's this, it says, 3 out of 5 young adults who stop attending their church will also drop their affiliation with any Christian traditions. This means if we have some young people and they just, you know, we don't see them for a while, or they're not attending for a while, that it seems, according to the study that was done, that attendance and faith actually are connected to one another. And what's not on this thing back here is a time frame, and it's 1 year, is that within a year, 60% of all the young adults who, if they stop attending our church, within 1 year, 60% of them won't even identify as Christian, which to me is staggering. And so does attendance and being part of a community of faith matter? Well, it absolutely does. And so that's just one that I want to do. And I'll do one more of these before I get into this. And you don't really need to understand this graph that much, but all it's saying is there's this, if you look at the orange along the bottom, this is people who attend church like at least more than once a week. There's been this thought, well, of course we lose some young people, but you know, once they have kids, they get married, of course at the age of 30 or 31 or 32, that, you know, they're all rushed back in the church with their kids and stuff. When this study was done, there's no, if you look down, there's a little bump at 26, and then there's no mass return to the church once, you know, people have kids and everything else. So there's that myth that, oh, they'll all come back. No, it's not true. They have not returned in mass, and it's not reality. And so I'm going to do a few things tonight, and this one here, this one I love. I talk about this everywhere I go, and I just absolutely love this. And so the people in the front row, you can't give any answers right now, but I have this awesome picture of the Last Supper behind me. Now, in this picture, now, I've seen this picture in churches, or a similar one. It's painted on walls and everything else. But can anyone point out one or two things that are wrong with this picture? It's not a trick question. There's actually things that are wrong with this picture. Just yell it out if you got one. Of course, they were reclining around a table. Maybe they're posing for this picture now. I don't know. But just they had to paint. It took a month to paint the picture. But everyone just stay there. Don't move. And but yeah, that's not how they were sitting. Yeah, so the life expectancy at this time, most of the people in this picture wouldn't have been alive. So Jesus, of course, is in his 30s. And most Bible scholars believe that disciples were, when Jesus said, come follow me, were between the ages of 14, with the oldest possibly being 21. That would have been, that's the oldest that they think they were. And of course, everywhere I go, I have some people who get quite upset about that. And but we have a couple past here. How old do most Bible scholars believe that Mary was when she gave birth to Jesus? Anyone want to throw that out there? 14, 15? Okay, so did God make a mistake about that one? Okay. So every time someone gets upset about how old I say the disciples are, I'm like, now, I'll throw a couple things out. I realized life was different. I realized that. And so, of course, life was different. There's a couple other things wrong with the picture, by the way. There's no Jewish people in the picture, which is always a problem. If this is the Last Supper, like if you look what's on the table, like this is why you don't send, we just said it was probably younger people. This is why you don't always send a group of young guys to get a dinner ready, because if you look what's at the Last Supper, like someone had, like there's just hardly any food there. It looks like they're watching, they're set up for the, that could be a TV facing the other way, set up to watch the football game. I realize it's probably something else. Yeah. So this group of people, first of all, is obviously much younger than the people in this picture. This isn't reality of what the Last Supper looked like. But not to put down the person who painted this, because really what happened when some of these ancient pictures that we use today of the Last Supper happened is, you know, someone went to church or read in the Bible and had this picture in their mind of what the Last Supper looked like, so they just painted it to the best of their ability. But the age of the disciples is not something we speak about very often. And so life is different. So at the age of 19 in Jewish culture, you would at that point be the master of your craft. Like you would have been studying under whether it be a father, family member, and you'd be like, you're just considered a man. And so some of the things that have thrown me off, a couple years ago, I was working with this group called Next Level International. We were doing trips in Eastern Europe. So we're in Serbia several times working with the gypsy population in Serbia. And so I remember on this one trip, and we were working with this pastor called Pastor Salim. And it was so funny, they're sending us to do church plant training with these people, which is absolutely ridiculous, because at this point I'd probably been involved with two church plants. Everyone I was with had planted way more churches than any of us going to do teaching on church planting, which is, I think the training was for us. I think they had tricked us to get us there to say, you guys have no idea what you're doing in Canada. I really think that was the plan. So we get there, and this guy, Pastor Salim, who a Serbian church decided that they would let Pastor Salim start a gypsy church using their building. And within a matter of years, they had 2,000 people coming. And their church was in a tent. They had bought an old circus tent, and that was their church. And we got there, like, it was crazy how many people were there. And so the first day, Pastor Salim, of course, says, I want to take you to one of the church plants. And then I'm like, wow, how many church plants do you have? He said, well, we've got about 10 going on right now. I was like, oh my goodness. So we got the first one, and I literally walk in, and so the only space, because church is already going on, there's a door, and there's a little bit of space, because this is the front row, and it's literally like, I'm this close. This is how close the front row is, right? And so we squish in like this, because the only way you can walk, and then once I'm about to hear, then Pastor Salim says, and now Dave's going to preach. Like, zero warning. No warning. And he did that to me like 3 or 4 times that week, but by the 3rd or 4th time, I was like, ready, because like, he's going to ask me to preach wherever I go. And so at the end of the service, he introduces me to the pastor of the church. And he's 15. The church is packed. That's not the part that freaked me out. When he introduced me to his wife, And then they introduced me to their first baby. And this is like, that's not in my reality of like growing up in Canada, but amongst the culture we were in, that was quite normal. And they started, because then I had all kinds of questions like, this is not normal, right? But for them, it was quite normal. For me, it's not normal. There's a, yeah, at 13, we have a giant party. You become a man or woman. If you're a man, at that point, you are working for the rest of your life. You're taking on the trade of your parents or whatever else. And there's no, the term teenager doesn't even exist. And it kind of reminded me of when I think about, okay, what was Jewish culture like? And it's, we're trying to compare it to ours. Well, of course, could that work today? Here. And of course, we think, I don't know. And the reason we think that is because if you're in this room and you have teenagers, well, that's all I need to say. Right? That just explains itself. I have kids, I can't get them like to do the dishes, I can't get them to clean the rooms, I can't get them to do anything. And so the only problem with me thinking like that is this. I believe Jesus chose the disciples on purpose. I don't think, like, I believe churches for the last 2,000 years have been trying to figure out how do we plant, how do we start, how do we reach a community. And I actually don't think Jesus ever hid any of it. I think sometimes you read the Gospels in a way that we miss some of the most obvious things. And it's just this, what did Jesus do? Jesus purposely walked up to and picked a group of young people, and he invested his life into them. He spoke to the masses, he involved them in ministry, he spent, like, basically for years, spent his time investing in this one group of people on purpose. And I don't think that's hidden in the gospel. It's quite obvious. You thought, did Jesus have disciples? Yes. Did he know who they were? Well, of course he did. Did he call them? Yes, of course he did. Did he spend a lot of time with them? Yes, we know we spent a lot of time with them. Were they around? Yes. Did they do, when he was gone, did they do a lot of ministry? Yes. It's all there. And so I was thinking, if something could mess us up today, or if the devil could mess up something on us, would be for us to accept the lie that the people that Jesus chose on purpose can't do it today. Like that what Jesus did just can't work. And I think that's one of the things we've fallen for, is that we believe the lie that what Jesus did can't work. Or it's a terrible idea. It's like, you can try this. There's a couple churches represented here. Try this. Especially if this would work great if your like senior pastor wasn't here. Like say, you know what? I've prayed about this and this is what I've come up with. I'm just going to go spend some time in prayer, and I'm going to pray that God sends me to the right group of people. I'm going to go tell them just to come follow me. I'm going to invest in them the best I can, and then we're just going to leave the church in their hands and hope it all works out. Who's bored or pastor think we just, oh, that's a wonderful idea. That's what we should do. Nobody thinks it's a good idea. The only problem with it, I think it's a terrible idea, it's our own history. It's our own history. And it's actually what Jesus did. And so it scares the death, and it's because, I think we have a hard time passing something on. And so I'm going to speak more about that in just a minute. And just to back up, so when that study that I had all these fancy graphs, I have one more fancy graph to go along with it. So this is powerful right here. Way over on the left side, it's the only numbers I'm really going to talk about right now, is this. The engagers, what are something that make the engagers unique? What has affected the engagers? Why is this one group of people say that they are more likely to be involved today? And it's this. On this side over here, it's 62% of the engagers either agree or strongly agree that they were actually given something to do in their church. They are actually part of having meaningful ministry. Those that were invited to be part of the mission of the church. I'm not talking attend. You got to separate those two. those who were involved in the ministry of the church were far more likely to remain. And I was thinking, Jesus, when he called the disciples, this is part of what he did. There was never this thing, okay, in a couple years, you may be ready. This is confusing me about what Jesus did with the disciples. He sent them out in pairs to speak about him before Peter even said, you are the Christ, the Messiah. Like, we would think that's a terrible idea. Again, but it's what Jesus did. And I don't even know what you do with all that. I'm just saying it. But there's something that happens. Those that are involved are far more likely to stay. Involvement, and it's not just involved. There's things that happen when people are involved because they are living together in community, that they are praying together, they're doing something, they're seeing God work. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why involvement works. It's not just that you have someone around. It's like they become part of this. And our faith doesn't just become something we talk about. It's something that we're doing and we're living out together. And being invited into ministry also means, this doesn't mean that young people are doing ministry on themselves by themselves. It means that the church has invited them in, and these young people now are actually around mentors and spiritual parents and people who are pouring in their lives, and they're learning from each one of us in what they do. And then it's this part of that where actually, in a church where this is happening, it actually means it's just a healthy church. Because a healthy church should have every generation in it. And of course we'd be doing ministry and life together. And so it's not that some of these churches are going all the way. It just means that that church is in a healthy spot. So involvement matters. And the reason I think this is important, why I did that thing with the picture of the Last Supper, is this. If we don't think young people could do it or should do it, we will never let them do it. And so we sometimes need to break our own mindsets. Just last week, I had an unusual opportunity to speak to all the Catholic priests in our area of Cape Breton about youth ministry. And so there's this one, I call him a young guy, he's 55, and he's studying to be a deacon in the Catholic Church right now. And so we have this priest shortage in Cape Breton, so all these people studying to be able to do ministry in the Catholic Church. And so he's on a committee for youth ministry at his church, at St. Anne's. And so on that committee, he's the youngest one. And so there's committees ranging from 55 to about 80 at his church for people trying to do youth ministry. So someone asked him, when are your kids? So this is just last week. He said, when are your kids going to be able to do something at church? And he says, well, as soon as my parents let me, I'll make sure I pass it right on to my kids. And I was like, it is such a challenge that even as a 55-year-old felt like he had no part in his own church because everyone in leadership and who's doing stuff is older than him. Now, in evangelical churches, you'll find that number's just a little bit lower. But the same issue exists. And so this is what I think happens to a lot of our young people. And I don't want to just talk about young people who grew up in the church. I'm going to do two more of these, and then I want to take a little bit of a shift. I think how we do youth group can be absolutely incredible what happens. There's some amazing things that happen. So as a young person, Risto here goes to Grace Christian Fellowship. Is that the name of the church? Something. It's Grace. I'm just going to say Grace. Grace Fellowship. A Reformed Presbyterian church in Sydney Mines. And you go to youth group there? Yeah. And I bet you play in the band there too. Yeah. And next week you're helping out at VBS? Yeah. It's like me in all this stuff. So he's involved at this group that gets together on a weekly basis. They're doing like ministry. Next week you're doing a VBS, you're going to be ministering to kids in his community. And when we think about each one of these guys and girls that are here right now, I know are helping with senior high, and they're helping with junior high stuff and some kids stuff, and actually are involved with the planning, setting up, running the whole, everything, like this whole thing. And so we have, in our churches, right across the board in Canada, we have all these young people doing all this stuff. But once they turn 20, this is basically why we, when it comes to involvement, that we struggle. what's after that? Well, if you can stick it out to your 45, you probably could be in a leadership position of some kind in our church. And guess what? They haven't stayed. And it's because we've ruined them in a good way, because their whole Christian walk has not just been about tending, it's been about leading. Our young people, we have developed leaders throughout youth ministry across Canada and then have given them nothing to lead. And they'll go look for anything else because that doesn't exist where they are. And it's a struggle we have. Like, what do we do with all these people who've got a lot of energy and have a lot of problems too? And so we have this thing. So the story I told about the Catholic Church, we still have the same thing. It's just maybe a little bit later in life or earlier. I'll do this one here. And just finding God moments. And just I'm going to do this, show the stats slide first this time. Right here, the engagers. This is like 99% of the engagers strongly agree that they've had a personal encounter with God of some kind. So they could look back in their lives and say, you know, I'm going to have a hard time being that rejecter or that wanderer because I know that I had an experience with God of some kind. And so here's some crazy things. Over the past couple years, after this study came out, did kind of like, I wouldn't say it's an official study, but across Canada, it's between 95, every time I'm at a different Bible school teaching, we do this thing and we talk about how many people who are studying for full-time ministry went to kids camp, teen camp, or could be an MYC or something like that. It's between 95 to 100% of everybody studying for full-time ministry has had some kind of camp experience. Not like some, we're talking almost all. It's like absolutely incredible. And so I'm going to get a couple people to help me tonight. So Tatiana, come on up here. Tatiana is one of our kids from Cape Breton. Tatiana is like actually one of the first youth that started coming to our youth center like a long time ago. She wasn't really much shorter then either, though, but sorry, Ty. Anyways, can you say like what your church or Christian life looked like or church life looked like before you went to camp a couple years ago and then after? Like what happened when through going to a camp? Okay. What was your belief system like before going to a camp?
Oh. Yeah. So I went to youth group and I did kids programs and stuff before I was a Christian or before I went to camp. But I didn't want anything to do with like the church side of that. I wanted to do the programs or whatever. And then I went to camp and it was very emotional because I cried a lot.
And what happened during camp though?
Well, during camp, I was saved, and then after camp, I became more involved at the church, so from like 5 days a week to like 6 days a week to 7 days a week, and never being home. Then, I don't know, I started working at the church, and now I'm in discipleship school. School, we're not allowed to say school, it's not school.
Yeah.
Program.
So how much camp, going to camp, would you say changed your life?
Oh, a lot.
A lot. Awesome. I remember Ty, when she was younger, coming to church, and it'd be like, I want you to know I'm happy to hear, but I just want you to know, I don't believe in that God stuff. Just to let me know every once in a while, just to make me feel good about, you know, what we're doing and stuff. And to see something like that happen, it's like, it's just amazing. And so Ty actually went to Camp Evangeline, to teen camp a couple years ago and got saved while she was at camp. And you know what? Crazy thing is, she and many other young people probably heard me and a whole bunch of other people say the same stuff. But she goes to camp, and God just does it all there in 1 week. And it's just like, you work so hard, and then just does it all anyways, and they send them away, and someone else does, and it's like, oh my goodness, all that work we did, and anyways. But for some reason, okay, so out of all the kids and youth who are involved in churches today, you'd find out that the majority, over 50%, actually went to a Bible camp of some kind, but can point to this and say, I know that I had an experience with God. So it's not, I don't think it's actually just about camp, like that it has to be a camp, but it's making sure that our young people are having an experience with God somewhere. And it's not that we can force someone to have an experience with God. You can't manufacture that. But I think what we can do is lead people to where they are experiencing God. So I encourage every church to do this. Every group is a little bit different. Every church is a little bit different. And you know what? Different churches seem to attract different circles of people. And so this is what I encourage everyone to do. And this is something, it's a really good exercise to do personally, but I think as a youth group, as a church, you can do. And it's simply this. This may sound so simple, is to get a piece of paper and just start writing down when you had a God moment. Like, and just think back to the last year or two of your life. Like, when did that happen? So for me, this is one reason I love Cape Breton. I love being in the mountains. I love being like in the woods by myself. And so it's in those quiet moments that like, it's just, those are my moments. And I just love it. So I'd say in nature is one of mine. You can think of some. And then I don't know what it is. Whenever I go, like honestly, if I needed to get a whole sermon, plan out a month or two what's going to happen, for some reason for me, it's when I'm driving in my car and I'm just listening, and on a long trip, if I've got to drive 5 or 6 hours, I'm just set, because it's like everything else is shut off and I can just listen. And so it's in my car. Now that's maybe not be everyone's best God moments, right? So me, it's in my car or in the woods. Okay. And so if you sit down with a group of young people, you're going to ask, okay, what has helped you grow? So this group here, I'm going to get one or two more people to do something in a moment. I know what some of them are. So for Ty, it was teen camp. When we did this with our youth group, like a lot of them mentioned going to youth convention in Moncton or wherever it happens to be. It's in Moncton this year. And so those types of moments. And then people mentioned, you know, it was when we prayed and we knew someone was healed. And we got this whole list. So you may have this whole list. And so this is what I've come up with, though, is if you sit down and talk to your kids or some young people you're working with, ask, what are these God moments for you? You're going to find out how it is that they're connecting with God. And so this is the challenge. Sometimes you can look at the list. I can look at my list and realize that it never, for example, includes Sundays. Okay? Or for some of our young people, they didn't even mention youth group ever, which that was a whole, you know, for me as the pastor, that's pretty, they didn't mention one thing I did. I was like, great. Anyways, but it's amazing that we can sit around and plan out all our strategies and all the things we're going to work on, where we're going to put all of our time, and not one of them includes any way that our young people are connecting with God. So, I don't think it has to be hidden. I think it's actually as easy as sitting a bunch of people down and say, you're basically asking them to tell you their testimony, in a sense. When has God connected with you? And you're going to find out some young people connect incredibly in worship services. Some, it's going to be through serving. It's huge. So, Josh and Josh, both of them. We have two Joshes. Come up here. Not going to take a long time with this. Both of these guys carry a common story, though. And so, this is Josh from Hamilton. So, say something about something that has had a big effect on your life, though.
All right, so I'm Josh. I'm from Hamilton, like you said. Something that's had a big effect on my life and one of my God's moments was definitely the missions trip with Servant's Heart, like you guys are going on. That's where I met Dave, and that's why I'm here today. It was just through that, just through the people there, the kids, the families, the appreciation, and just really seeing God there. it was just life-changing for me, and that's where I had mine.
Awesome. And the other Josh.
I'm Josh from Cape Breton. And thing that happened to me, I was on a mission trip too, and just seeing God work through the kids there and how happy they were with so little, and how, like, you'd play with, like, the smallest thing. You play with a can or something, and they'd be so happy. And we have, like, iPhones. We have, like, so much in just, like, North America, and that we're not near as happy as them. And it was just, like, such a change in my life, and it was just, like, wow. Like, God's working here big time, and, like, I want to be part of that. And then so that had a big impact on me.
Awesome. So serving mission, and again, I don't know if it has to be an overseas mission trip. It's just finding ways that they're involved serving. And so again, here's interesting. I didn't know this until the Hemorrhaging Faith Study came out. Over half, again, of all the youth and young adults that are in church, actively involved in church day across Canada, over half of them have been on some kind of short-term missions trip. It's crazy how much effect attendance, serving, involving, and helping young people have God moments. As a fact, those are three or four of the big ones. One, I'm not going to have time to do all these, but one is just the role of parents in people's lives. The difference between the engagers and all the other things, the effect of parents is absolutely incredible. That young people who have two parents who are involved in their church, and that their young, that their kids see them actually not just attending, but actually serving, being involved, and reading their Bible at home and praying. The amount of that have that going for them is the amount of them that stay engaged in the faith is so much higher than someone that has no one. And so I'll just do two things quickly because I want to have some time for some questions. Is this, and it's simply adopting. And how you do this is something that this, whether it's be in our building like this or in our community, I'm not saying how you do this or where this needs to happen, but it needs to be a mindset of the church. When someone gets saved or steps in the doors, like something we're happy that they're here, but we need to understand that they're actually have become part of the family of God. And so Lifeway did this study. Lifeway is a group who does all these studies in the States. And they said this. So in Glace Bay, 95% of all the kids who come to our youth group in our church do not have Christian parents. Okay? So according to Lifeway, this is what something they said, and I just read a couple years ago, and it's really made me think about what we do as a youth ministry where we are. And if you're going to reach out, and if you're going to restart basically youth ministry in this community, this, you'd have the same thing. If you could get 100 young people to come here or a different church to youth group, they're not all going to have Christian parents, right? They're going to be kids from your community. And so this is what these people were saying, that if you had 100 of these people come into your church and no one in your church adopts them, like actually becomes a spiritual parent of some kind, that not just that they're attending and they have a leader, but that someone doesn't spiritually adopt them to take them on as a student, or that I'm going to be your mentor, I'm going to just make sure that you make it. And a group of people really doesn't, I don't think that's just one person, a group of people doesn't do that. Lifeway put this thing out and said, 1 out of 100 will remain as active adults if no one adopts them. And the difference between churches who, like, when young people come in, they're not just this annoying little noisemaker, they're my kids. That mindset alone changes everything. And this is the best way to remember it. Risto, you won't forget this story, okay? Sorry, I'm picking on Risto today. When I was younger, my sister used to babysit other people's babies, right? In our house. They cried. I didn't have kids at this point because I was younger than her. And you know what else they did? They pooped. And I remember my sister changing diapers. And I thought, that is the most disgusting thing you could ever do. And not only diapers, changing some, they're not even your kids, they're someone else's. Now, my wife's a nurse, so she has to deal with this all the time. But I was thinking, well, at least she gets paid to do this, like good money to do this. So my sister's doing this, and I was like, and when I was young, I was like, over my dead body, would I ever do something so disgusting? And have you smelled that? What comes out of that? And it's just horrendous what's going on. So, my first son's born, Matthew. That day, I was changing diapers. And I actually remember having, when our youngest, Amanda, I still remember the day. We were living in Windsor, Nova Scotia, and she was fully potty trained. And I realized we had just lived 10 years of our lives straight, changing at least one set of diapers every day. And like, we had a party, right? And but this one day, I just started changing diapers and did it for 10 years straight. And you know what? It stunk every time. But I'll tell you what the difference was. Matthew is mine. And when they're yours, you're put up with a lot of stuff that stinks. If they're not yours, they'll always be the nuisance. And there'll always be something wrong with them. And one of the attitudes that needs to change, when we think young people come in, they don't know, like, the culture. They don't understand, like, what's normal. And how could they? They didn't grow up in this. And there's a story in the Gospels about this guy who gets healed. And Jesus, of course, says, take up your mat and walk. And so the guy picks up his mat and he starts booting her around everywhere. That's how we'd say it in Cape Breton, if that happened in Cape Breton. The guy was just booting her around with a mat. And so, but nowhere in Scripture is it recorded that the religious people, did anyone notice that the guy who couldn't walk is running around? The only thing that's recorded is there's people upset that someone's carrying a mat. Completely missing the miracle that the guy was running around. All they could see was a mat. And sometimes people will come in, and sometimes you just need to be happy that they're hearing the gospel, and all we're complaining about is the mats that they're carrying around. And we're just missing out on the miracle that's going on. It's just, dear Lord, don't ever do that. That's absolutely ridiculous. And so it changed the mindset. And then the last one, I spoke way too long, dear Lord. It's creating safe space. And this is what I believe every church, we have this opportunity, every church, I believe God has blessed every church with space. Like in Cape Breton, we have such addiction issues, and I just hear all the time, if we just had more places to do this, we had this, that. You know, it just sickens me every time I hear that, because I'll tell you who owns the most space in Cape Breton that sits empty almost all week. The church. I'm speaking about churches all together. The church owns the most space. God's already blessed us with it. And so what do we do with what God has already blessed us with? And this is maybe a different way to think about it. I love the story. One of our pastors shared this just a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to end with this, about, it was actually about St. Patrick. And they had this, and his church, they built this wall around it, and it was only this high. And it was a round wall. They built it around, and it came to the front, and it was kind of modeled after the story, of course, that Jesus is the gate, and how the same thing that the shepherds would have had to keep all the sheep in. But it wasn't a wall to keep people out at all. It was this. It was the idea that he believed that they needed to create a sanctuary. And now we have an idea of what a sanctuary is. It's like this quiet spot, like we're in a sanctuary right now, and it's a place, you know, for reverence. The original idea of this as sanctuary had nothing to do with that. Sanctuary was a place that someone could go to find peace. It was somewhere where those who had no hope could come and find hope. It was somewhere that those who were hungry could come and get something to eat. It's the place where that those who were lost could be found. Those who had no clothes could come and be clothed. And they built this thing, and the idea was that when someone steps into this spot, they're going to have a picture of what the kingdom of God looks like. And that if there's something that young people, I believe, are looking for, it is safe space. And it is someone to love them. And it is someone to adopt them. And something we want to just work on the programs. If you don't have people who will love, it doesn't matter what program you ever start. Our best youth leaders, I don't want to say best youth leaders, one of our best youth leaders, though. We have a lady in our church, she's 50, her name's Gosha. She is a mom to countless amounts of kids. And I say, Where's the starting point? It's simply that. It's actually just being able to love people. And I can go, we have a bunch, I can have share a lot about ideas of stuff that we've done. But we're going to do a couple questions in a minute, and I do need to stop, so don't go too long. But let's do even 10 minutes. That's all right.
Can I have one of you guys be a runner on this side, and I'll be a runner on this side? Just take the mic to if somebody has a question. So if you've got any questions, Dave gave us four great keys. Like he said, there's lots more we could talk about, but four great keys tonight. Do you have questions about what he's done or things that have worked or haven't worked or whatever?
First of all, thank you very much for coming and presenting here to us tonight. We really appreciate it. My name is Jim Chamberlain. I'm an educator here in Bathurst. I work with at-risk youth through our local high school. One of the things that I'm seeing with our youth is a disenfranchisement with everything that is around them. And sort of a belief that I've always held is that if we show them a powerful light, if we just be there for them, that leads them into, why are you a light? And I always felt that that question will come if you open the door that way. I feel I don't have to stand there and preach the word of God. But if I stand there and tell them and make them have a safe place, which you say is important, and that I'm going to listen to them, I think that light itself will draw them towards you. And with that, I'm wondering why, or have you tried starting sports clubs? One thing that comes to mind, and I wanted to chat with this man before the end of this week, is why don't we create some sort of summer sports activity that is just simply, let's play sports in a safe environment or an activity we can do that's relatively cheap. I think basketball would be the first one, where we can just simply step out and have a safe place for any kid that can come forward and play a sport with no questions asked. And there's the light that we bring forward. Have you brought forward any activities, sports? I think sports, because that's something that I'm big into. But
well, yes. Yeah. Let me tell you what we do. I didn't even talk about what we do in Cape Breton. We actually run two youth centers. We run between both centers, I don't know, between 300 and 500 youth per week come through our doors. That's between two centers. And some of those are repeats. And so we started on, actually from Sunday night right till Thursday night, regular program, and then our building's used. So we have, I'll tell you what we did do that I thought was smart. So we live in Canada, which has unique things about it. So we picked some things that aren't available in the winter. So we have, in a given week right now, we have two age groups for floor hockey in Glace Bay, one in Sydney. We have two skateboard nights, two scooter nights. We have open gym nights. And just, there's nothing for kids in Glace Bay to do. So this is kind of how we connect with kids. And so actually almost every day there's some sport going on. And we just have a building we can do that in. We have two buildings we do that in. But it's been the open door. It's actually how we met a lot of the kids that come to like our youth group. Is actually through that. And so what we did, though, when we started is the skateboarding one, for example, super easy, because like here right now, I noticed there's a skate park here. I noticed that there's 6 feet of snow on top of it. So if you happen to be the spot to have indoor that, you'll be the only place. You'll have everyone who does it. You don't even have to try. They all come. You'll be the only, because you're the only place. So some of what we did with sports stuff, just to give stuff for our community, we just picked stuff that the kids didn't have anywhere to go, and we're the only place for them to do it. Well, I'm glad you asked that question. Yes. So here is what makes what we do a little bit unique. Every church doesn't operate this way. Our buildings, when we got them, we didn't need them to hold our services in. Our community is in our building every day. We have actually given our building away to our community. That's the best way to describe it. So if you want to meet people in Glace Bay, you can actually come to one of our centers, and you can meet random people from Glace Bay all day. And so when it comes to some of those sports, though, in the summers, we do go to the parks and then invite kids, okay, you can come back and do this at our place all year round. So we're actually very in the community. These kids here probably would know every, I don't want to say, they probably actually do know every scooter or skateboard and probably almost half the hockey players in Glace Bay just from being involved with sports programs. So it's a huge open door. But it's so much easier than you think it is. You just pick the right thing. We run some programs that take zero prep. We unlock the door and we hang out with people. It's a really good opportunity because it's like low stress. And I love those things because I have enough stress. So, any other questions?
Thanks, Dave, for your presentation. I really appreciate it. I would like to know what would you do if you would be in a situation like we have quite a few young people that grew in our church that left for school or working outside, and quite a few came back, you know, in town, and now they're maybe 30 some years old, and most of them didn't come back to church. Mm-hmm. And I'm really praying, you know, and seeking God, what can we do to reach them back, you know, so because we need them.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you have anything to, I'm sure you have something to say about that.
Yeah.
I would appreciate it.
First of all, I don't think there is one easy answer, because the reasons someone may come back could be pretty varied, I guess. But, I mean, a lot of it is, are they involved with, do they feel they're involved, or are they needed there? And I think having that conversation, I know a couple churches, as we did this hemorrhaging faith study across Canada, that one of the things that James Penner, the guy who actually did most of the work on the study, he really encouraged churches basically to do a round table, bringing these people together, and really talking about, like, what do you feel the church, how could they be part of serving the church? Not like just saying, how could you come, we just want you attending again, but how could you serve this community? How could we work together? And it's basically inviting them into the conversation. And I think it's the same as all of us. If you feel we're part of something, we're more likely to go. It doesn't mean they're all going to come back. But if they can feel like, okay, I'm going to come back, but I'm also going to have ownership of it. But I do believe this, that I don't think that our young people, like, two of the young people, these young people are from our church. I don't think they would question if they feel that there's a dedication on the leadership's part and the pastor's part to them. And so it's like, how can we as a leadership express this invitation for you to be part of this mission that we're on? And ask them what their mission is, too. And so, that's a starting point. So I love what James Penner said about inviting them into the conversation. Like, don't just hope that happens. Actually invite them in and be intentional. Okay, is there a way that we can address some of these things? Like, some of those things, whether or not they may come out in conversation, but inviting people on mission. Like, if being involved, some of the things we mentioned are the most important things to this age group, how do you address that with them? So, I don't know if that answers your question, Luke. I'm going to do a slight commercial before the next thing, because I always forget to